I'm Steve Kraske at the Kansas City Star, and this is Up to Date. So your kid went off to college, experienced freedom, set his own schedule, abided by his own rules, and now he's home for a winter break for a few weeks. Yes, there's going to be some tension. We've seen it play out in movies and TV shows that poke fun at family dysfunction around the holidays. Today, psychologist Wes Crenshaw tells us about the friction between college students and parents during vacations. He'll explain how the holidays are perceived differently by teens and young adults than their parents, and how much teens should give in to parental demands for time at home. Later on this hour, Brian McTavish returns with some great ideas to keep the family together this weekend. It's Up to Date, following this hour's news. Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. If you're the mom or dad of a college student, odds are that your student may be home for the holidays, which can create all sorts of issues. Curfews, use of the family car, family time versus time with friends. Your college student isn't used to a whole lot of rules after spending so much time away. Today we'll talk about that sort of holiday time tension and how to deal with it. Our guest today is Dr. Wes Crenshaw, who's out with a pair of books titled Dear Dr. Wes, Real Life Advice for Parents of Teens. What makes these books interesting is that they were written with a panel of teenage co-authors who chimed in with their own thoughts, too. Wes Crenshaw specializes in working with adolescents and their families in his private practice in Lawrence. He writes the Double Take advice column in the Lawrence Journal World. And Wes, welcome. Nice to have you.
Nice to be here.
Good morning. Well, how many more calls from parents or teens do you typically get this time of year when issues with returning college students come to the fore?
Well, it's particularly common now because, you know, there are a lot of young people I've seen since they were 13 or 14 that are off in college now. And it's almost a daily event to get an email or text message, which is, you know, how they communicate, or Facebook, in which they're asking me very specific stepwise advice on how to cope with being home for the holidays.
Like step by step.
Absolutely. I do more text message coaching this time of year on that topic than about any other.
Yeah. How do you bill for that? Texting.
Not very well.
Yes, I was going to say.
It's like public service for those that I see.
So. Well, how are the holidays perceived differently by teens and young adults than by their parents and other relatives, for that matter?
Well, in research, you'd call it an inverse relationship, in that they have very opposite views. The adults are hanging on to a model of family unity, and even though that may have been kind of an illusion to begin with, they mm-hmm. cling to it with great love.
We're all going to sit around and play Monopoly for hours and hours together and be happy.
Exactly, yeah. And watch, you know, It's a Wonderful Life or something. Kids very much, and very legitimately, I want to say, see this as a time of relaxation, a time to rest, a time to run around with friends, and not have to, particularly if they're in college or high school, not have to think about their calculus final. And these two things in the holiday crucible come together to create some tension and conflict.
That's interesting. So just two different worldviews of the same situation.
Exactly right.
Yeah. How much should families expect to see teens during the holidays, and how much should teens give in to parental demands for time at home? Answer the dilemma here, I guess, Wes.
Well, it depends on how easily teens can sneak out. I think the best thing they can do is sit down and actually have some brief conversation about what the expectations are, particularly for the young adults, and get real specific. They've got to be able to say, I really want you to come to Christmas dinner.
And that'd be nice.
Yeah, exactly. And kind of have that clarified, because otherwise kids are thinking about kid things and they're not going to necessarily have empathy for some of the adult matters that are put on the table at that time of year.
Mm-hmm. Well, how many families sort of skip this step of actually having a conversation? Because I can just see so many families just assuming some things are going to happen, then lots of hurt when things don't happen, Wes.
The 94.7%. No, the vast majority. And it's kind of interesting because we have such a culture of the holidays that I think people want to turn off the idea that there's going to be conflict, and yet that's exactly what we associate with the holidays, is families getting together and having drama with each other. So one ought to think ahead, but they just don't.
Well, we associate a lot of that family drama largely because of mass culture, which sort of has imbued all of us with this idea that all heck is going to break loose at the holidays. We see it on TV. We see it in the movies. We see it all the time, right?
Well, it's true. And I was trying to think the other day, you know, how far back does this go in the media? And I think one of the first movies would have been Meet Me in St. Louis, which everybody thinks is this jolly holiday movie. And it's this dark, you know, the poor little girl goes insane in the middle of the movie because of this conflict, and it happens to take place around the holidays. But a lot of media really does provide this kind of idea that once you put people in these impossible situations, you'll see them do some kind of interesting things. And to some degree, that parallels real life.
Well, that's just the point, though. You say impossible situations, and yet we're talking about kids coming home to their families. And in theory, on one level, it shouldn't be that complicated at all. Kids are coming home. They're coming back into the family nest. And yet, it's just not as simple as all of that.
Well, I think you hit it right on the nose. You have this parallel things happening. On one hand, these are familiar people that you're supposed to know. And on the other, they are radical new beings from another planet. They are coming in with a whole new culture, mm-hmm. and a whole new way of thinking. And I mean, if you go to college and you don't do that, you've apparently missed the memo. Mm-hmm. That's what college is about. And so it's hard, especially as a parent, if you are feeling the sense of loss over the child, you know, they're off having their life now, and forgetting that's the point of being a parent. It's the profession that your best customers fire you. You're supposed to no longer be in that role. If you forget that, then you have anger and resentment about that and kind of tend to lean on the kids with it.
So the hot spots of conflict in this age group during the holidays would be what, Wes?
Well, you hit a few of them. The time spent with friends versus family.
Yeah.
The one of the ones that you maybe wouldn't expect is the rest factor. I just got a text message yesterday from a kid who is a student locally but who is lives elsewhere, begging me to intervene with the parents just so this individual could sleep in the morning till 10 o'clock. The parent wants the kid up and hopping. And this young person just finished a series of finals that make me anxious just talking to the person. It makes me anxious to think about these finals. And so they, you know, need a week to sleep in. That alone becomes concerning. And conflict comes up from just that issue.
Let's get our listeners involved in our conversation here. We're visiting with Dr. Wes Crenshaw. He's the author of a pair of books titled Dear Dr. Wes, Real Life Advice for Parents of Teens. If you're experiencing some current tension around the house because of a returning college student, son or daughter, have questions for Dr. Wes, this would be a great time to call 816-235-2888, our email address, UpToDate@kcur.org, or tweet us at @KCURUpToDate. If your college student has a boyfriend or girlfriend, here's another hot spot, Wes. How should families handle dating partners at holiday time? You know, do you include them? Do you exclude them for the sake of family time? What do you advise?
For the young adults, there's kind of two issues, and one of them is the extent to which the dating partner can be involved in the family. And the second one is the standard young adult issue of how much intimacy is allowed in the home. So hitting the easy one first, the student brings home the boyfriend. My advice always is to try and include that person in the family's activities, because this is all dating is practice in the teen years and early adulthood. And if you practice to be inclusive, then someday when you are actually marrying your kid off, you will have practiced that and know how to do it, and the kid will know how to respond. If you're very exclusive with a dating partner, this is a good way to have them move in together over the holiday. You will get the exact opposite of what you're looking for.
And a lot of parents, their first impulse is going to be, no, this is family time.
Exactly.
This is our time. Get the heck out of here. You're an intruder, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I can just tell you from personal experience, when I was a college student, my wife's family was very inclusive, and that really helped build the bond for my wife and I prior to being married. And also, I feel a part of that family now. So just personally, I think that was a good experience, and I advise others to go down that path.
Now, you mentioned that the whole intimacy question, son or daughter brings home boyfriend, girlfriend, and things begin to happen around the house, and that can be really uncomfortable.
It can. We've moved in the last 10 years toward, I think, more tolerance of intimacy between teenagers, to the extent that it probably goes beyond what I would recommend. I know people who allow co-ed sleepovers in the high school, late high school years, and, you know, I may not.
Whoa.
I'm not kidding.
Lawrence is getting a little ahead of us here in Kansas City, I think. Co-ed sleepovers in high school, college?
Well, yeah, we burned the union in 68. Forget that. But, I don't think that's nearly as uncommon as you think. It's certainly
well, it is at my household.
Well,
Wes.
It is at mine, yeah. Too. I assure you. But once they get out of the home, it's more arguable as to what's appropriate. I still hold to the idea that parents have a right to, you know, govern what goes on under their home, whether you're 18 or 12 or 25.
Yeah.
But in some situations, you know, if the dating partner really has become a part of the family and they feel comfortable with allowing co-ed sleepovers, if you will, at 21 or 2, I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. I just think you want to reinforce the behavior you really want your child to have. And whatever that is, go for it. But, yes, that becomes an issue.
Well, that might spark a few comments from listeners.
Sure.
Would you allow co-ed sleepovers in your house during the high school years or even, for that matter, during the college years? Our phone number here again, 816-235-2888. Our email address, update@kcur.org, or go to KCUR's Facebook page. Well, I can only imagine that's gonna be an issue for a lot of people.
Oh, sure. And to be clear, that's not what I think is too great an idea, but there are a lot of people who are okay with it. And again, if you know someone is going to be, particularly as they lean more and more towards engagement, you know, people aren't getting married in the rates they were a few years ago. And if people are waiting for marriage specifically to allow a partner to be in the home, they may be waiting a long time. So these are all things we have to think about.
You know, how is dating different today from when, you know, you and I were kids, you know, once upon a time? How have things changed? What should parents of today be aware of, Wes?
We go into extensive detail on that in both the book for parents and the book for teens, because it is a crucial issue all around. Dating bears very little resemblance to what it was 10 or 15 years ago. And my observations have been, and the kids I work with would agree, that there are really about 2.5 dating styles now. There is the what I call the radical monogamists, and this is sort of going steady on steroids.
Like just real exclusive.
Very
intense.
Yeah, almost little marriages. And the second one is, you know, what's commonly referred to as hooking up. And the hookup culture is a strong and, I would argue, dominant culture.
More casual.
Exactly. And then the half of the 2.5 is the friends with benefits theory. Mm-hmm. And these days, one of the biggest changes for teenagers and young adults is that they work in this sort of double helix going back and forth between dating and friendship. Mm-hmm. And they tend to not have very clear boundaries between those two.
Mm-hmm.
This is probably the largest dating problem I work with right now, is that issue.
Go back to the hooking up model, I mean, which you say is the most dominant model of dating these days. Describe it a little more fully so people can understand what you're talking about.
Well, this is a family show, so I don't
know. We're trying.
Yeah.
You're pushing it here.
I think I can figure out how to do it. The problem with the term hookup is that it actually does not have a precise meaning. And it can run anywhere from, you know, the standard making out onto the things that go well beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
And so until you even understand the definition, if you hear your daughter hooked up with somebody, that doesn't necessarily tell you anything.
Mm-hmm.
But the underlying concept of it is that it is casual and it's not connected to much of a relationship, or if the relationship is there, it's more of a friendship.
Well, what do you make of that? Why has that style emerged, Wes, as being the dominant style? What is that about?
I suspect that it reflects a deterioration in the adult culture of our sense of respect for relationships, long-term relationships. Most kids live
in a divorce rate. You're talking about.
Most kids live in a divorced home or in a single-parent home of some sort. So the kids tend to not trust. I call this that they don't trust the us of the world. Mm-hmm. That they really trust the you and the me, and that's different than being an us. So I think they reflect that in their dating patterns. The second thing is that that just generally sexuality has become a whole lot easier topic for people to discuss nowadays, and to enact. And mm-hmm. so there's no requirement for a relationship in the general dating culture right now.
Do you put a judgment on that? Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, it's hard to do this business and not have some opinions about things, because people are asking you your opinions about things. And my view is that's probably not too great. If I have to vote on which of those models I like the radical monogamists, even though that itself brings forth a number of problems, because nobody's really ready to be married at 16. So each of those has its problems, but I'm always a fan of true love.
We received this question from Jim at our email address, updatedat.kcur.org. My son came home from college and was acting erratic, so I tested him for marijuana. It was positive. So what do I do now?
Well, I've got a chapter for you to read.
Here, buddy, read this.
Yeah. This is a tough problem. The marijuana use, I got a – be honest, I'm not a big fan of substance abuse to begin with, so I've had to really adapt my ability to work with people on that and feel good in that environment. But the marijuana use situation is really gone these days from a sort of fun recreational thing to at times a kind of daily way of life. Now, to be fair, not everyone's doing it, the old line, but it's much more accepted even amongst the non-users. So that doesn't surprise me. I hear that one quite a bit. What is he going to do? That's tricky, because he has a limited influence over a young adult in his home. And at the very minimum, I think he needs to be ultra clear with the young adult that he's not going to accept any possession in the home and any use in the home. And I think then the next question is he going to accept the young adult in the home? And that's a hard one to make a call on, because if he really feels that it's impairing the young adult, you have to make a choice whether you want to be an enabler, as they say in the AA literature, or whether you want to set a firm stand. And without knowing the nature of that relationship, it's hard to tell which way to go.
How do you walk a parent through that decision? Because, boy, you're right. That is such a difficult decision you just laid out there, at least for some people. How would you help a parent make a call there?
I would first really try to understand the extent to which that usage or any substance usage is impairing the individual. He uses the term behaved erratically. If somebody is smoking that much that they're noticeably behaving erratically, I guess I would be a little concerned. And then once you've made an assessment of that, you have an idea how hard a stand to take. The worst mistake I see people make in this situation is they get in there and they make this super hard stand. You know, it's a tough love, and they send somebody off to treatment. And then about the time they realize how hard that is, they give up.
Yeah.
And that sends the wrong message.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Again, our phone number here, 816-235-2888. Our email address is updatedat.kcur.org. Here's another question on our email, updatedat.kcur.org. What happens when your kid comes home from college with a tattoo?
What happens when they don't come home from college with a tattoo? It's so uncommon now. That is so typical. And let me give you my tattoo advice first, and it'll help with this question. I think I'll show you my tattoo later, Steve, but I didn't get mine until I was about 32, and it says father in Chinese calligraphy. And yes, I had the calligraphy checked. It really says father. That's meaningful to me, and it will be meaningful to me forever. I would not have been capable in my young adult years of coming up with a good idea for a tattoo. Now, I hear the groans and screams of young people who are wise about these things. So I just think one should think ahead and think about what is going to be meaningful to me at 39 that's meaningful to me at 21, and go with that. Now, if the parent wants to throw a big fit about this. I can assure them that there will be many more tattoos at every holiday and a lot of lip piercings and mm-hmm. Lord knows what else. So I would be admiring of it. And if you have upset about it, grab your spouse and the two of you go to the park and scream how much you hate it. But the young person is expressing a permanent monument to their independence.
Just right there.
Yeah.
Get our number here, 816-235-2888, our email address, update@kcur.org. What do parents do wrong most often, Wes, when it comes to dealing with their teenage kids? Do you see a pattern that sort of exists out there?
Well, I think not knowing them very well mm-hmm. is the principal shortcoming in parenting right now. You have to spend a lot of time with kids, and time is not on our side right now in this society. We are an awful busy bunch in order to really spend time with our kids. And if you don't start that when they're little, you don't have the relationship with them as teenagers that you need. Now, even if you are perfect in every way in making a relationship with a kid, the teenager is going to still pull away from that. That is the point of being a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
But you're better positioned to deal with that ongoing relationship. And so having kids that you don't have time to work with is a big problem.
I was going to say, it's not only time, but just finding the right openings to sort of exploit what you're talking about there. Because certain teens that I know these days, boy, they are quick to shut things down and indicate pretty clearly they don't want to spend a whole lot of time with mom or dad.
Well, and that absolutely is going to be true. But teenagers, here's a quick trick to throw in there. Typically, if you want to take your kid, your teenager, and do something, you know, Worlds of Fun, Disney World, whatever, the quickest way to get them to want to do that is to bring a friend or a boyfriend, if it's a girl, girlfriend, it's a boy, whatever they may be, bring the friend with them, and they will want to go more because the friends will always have a more empathic view of you as a parent than your own child does.
Yeah.
And the kid likes to have a peer-age person with him, and that's a great way to do it, and parents
that defeats the purpose sometimes. You want to spend time with your son or daughter, and if they're with a buddy, then you don't get that sort of quality time you're looking for.
You are speaking like a parent. That is sounds so true. And yet if you want
true, though,
to
right?
It is, but if you want to know who your child is at 15, you have to know who they are in a social context. You cannot know them individually anymore. They are out in the world 95% of the time.
So your advice is don't shy away from having a friend come along because that may be the way to do it.
Exactly. It has so many benefits. And I one of my weird things I do when I'm on vacation is I like to watch families because, you know, when you're working in my biz, you're seeing a lot of difficulties. And I like to see the people interacting and have fun. You would be surprised how many times I visit with a family on a trip and they have tagging along a boyfriend, girlfriend, friend, acquaintance, close acquaintance, whatever. They do this a lot and they are having the best time.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
That's really good advice. Okay, let's go to Wallace from Mission. Wallace, I just called 816-235-2888. Our email address again, update@kcur.org. Wallace, you're on with Dr. Wes Crenshaw. Good morning.
Good morning. I just want to make a comment. I have a personal story to tell y'all.
Yeah.
There was an incident where my son came back and he got a tattoo without my permission.
Mm-hmm.
And couldn't do much about it. And the trick in this story, the caveat is that the tattoo was implanted by a spaceship operated by a foreign intelligence agency.
Yeah, I hate it when that happens.
And so how did you deal with it?
Well, occasionally he disappears. Any semblance of a regular schedule has been affecting his schoolwork. A little bit more depressed recently.
I'm going to take it that you are serious, that he's having some pretty serious psychological problems?
Well, it's serious in the sense that the spaceship picks him up every now and then.
That's serious in my book. This is always a tough spot. We have a section about this in our parenting book about the difficulties of helping a young adult with serious psychological problems, mm-hmm. and it's very difficult. I don't know what the Missouri laws are, but the Kansas laws make it as difficult to declare a teenager incompetent as it is a young adult, and mm-hmm. to get an outpatient order of commitment is very difficult because you're denying the rights of an individual by doing so. And so once a young adult begins to have mental illness as above the age of majority, it becomes very hard to intervene.
Wallace, we wish you luck. Thank you. Let's go to Mike from Olathe. Mike, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to make a comment about bringing friends along on vacation.
Yeah.
There is actually a benefit to the parents as well that we found. I mean, we took a vacation to Orlando several years ago with our teens by ourselves as a family, and it was pretty stressful because we spent all of our time trying to find things for the kids to do so they wouldn't be bored or they'd be happy. As a result, we didn't enjoy our vacation. The following year, we allowed a boyfriend and a friend to come with us, and to be honest with you, it was really liberating for my wife and I because we could trust that they were having fun. They weren't hating life because they were tagging along with the parents. That let us go out and do a lot of the things that we wanted to do on vacation as well. So there's benefit to the parents, not just to the kids, bringing friends along on a vacation. And I just wanted to make that comment because sometimes parents forget that some of these things that you can do for your kids have benefits for you as well, not just for the kids.
That is right on the money. I could not agree more. And both logistic benefits and I think emotional and psychological benefits to see them in that situation. Someday we'll have to do a show on all my observations on going to Disney World. I have it down to a science.
Same thing.
Yeah, both places, yeah.
Mike, thank you. Happy holidays to you.
Same to you. Thank you.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Dr. Wes Crenshaw about living with teens. He's the author of two books, Dear Dr. Wes, Real Life Advice for Parents of Teens. Again, our phone number here, 816-235-2888. Our email address, updatedate@kcur.org. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. And welcome back to the second half of Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. Join us tomorrow when our DVD gurus give us the gifts of their favorite movies on Up to Date. That's tomorrow on the show. This hour, we're visiting with Dr. Wes Crenshaw. He's out with a pair of books titled Dear Dr. Wes, Real Life Advice for Parents of Teens. He specializes in working with adolescents and writes the Double Take Advice column in the Lawrence Journal World. How did you get started doing the column in the newspaper over there, Wes?
Well, back in 2004, Jenny Kane was writing for her yearbook at Free State High School in Lawrence and interviewed me about something, and I've tried to remember what it was, but it's something that seemed awful serious for a yearbook, like depression or something. And it got us to talking about the fact that there really are not periodicals for the parenting of teens. If you want to learn how to parent a baby, which apparently is
lots
very difficult,
yeah,
you can find all of these books and periodicals, but there's a very limited number of ongoing.
Why
documents.
Is that? What do you make of that?
Well, I have my cynical view, which is that people actually think it's easier than it is until they get there, and so they don't read up in advance.
A wise friend once told me that the older they get, the tougher it gets.
That's absolutely true.
Yeah.
And the other problem with just a static book is that it doesn't keep up with the kind of daily changes in teen culture.
Social networking and everything else.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so the lack of periodicals for that made me think, well, we ought to write a column, and we pitched that to the Journal World, and they picked up on it. And it was kind of funny because initially they thought, well, you know, if a teenager is going to co-author it, maybe we shouldn't count on them to write more than every month or so. And I said, no, I think we can do it. And the eight authors since then over the years have never missed a deadline. Which is more than I can say for myself.
Tell us about that, because you actually incorporate teens into the column, teen voices. How does that work? What do you do?
Every April, we run a contest, and we get about 8 or 10 applicants from the several area high schools around Lawrence. And they have to write an essay on a challenge question. And I always make the challenge question really just awful. And they then come to the office, do an interview, and they have to write a second question or second answer to another terrible question. And then those are rated by a panel of writers from the Kansas City Writers Group.
Mm-hmm.
And then the winner gets the reward of a $1,100 scholarship and the real reward of getting to write 50 columns a year.
Wow. And it works out that way.
It does. And what has been really amazing to me as I've gone back now to edit these for the book is really how much smarter their advice is on average than mine is. Read the teenagers. Don't listen to me.
They get the world the way it works. 816-235-2888. Tim from Independence, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. I'm speaking from maybe a more fortunate situation. We have three grown sons, and things went pretty well. I can remember a Christmas trip that was awkward and probably taught me the lesson that I no longer had the right to dictate what we do when we travel. That wasn't all that bad. But my main comment was just to think, I think as parents, you need to remember, hope you remember, that your goal is to raise children to become independent of you. And that means that there are going to be some things that you don't always like or always agree with. But, you know, that's a much better deal than having them having to come home and live with you and you support them, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, you raise them to leave the nest. And you need to remember that from little on already, that's the goal.
Tim?
Very, very good point. I remember my dad. I was an only child, so once I leave the home, that's the end of that. And my dad was a minister, and one of the members of his congregation said, Wes is going off to college, and you guys must feel such a loss. And he said, nope, he says, that's our job. That's what we're here for. Mm-hmm. And that's so on the money. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Tim, thank you for the call.
Thanks.
Yeah, bye-bye. Sarah from Kansas City, Missouri writes us with this suggestion. Although it's hard, try talking to your teen as if he is someone else's child. The words that come out of your mouth will be different than the script you are used to following.
Yep, good advice, because that what she's talking about there is that you eliminate the sense of emotional reactivity that goes along with your comments. And that's a good tool to use with anybody you have an emotional relationship with. You have to ask yourself, would I really speak to my spouse would I speak to someone else the way I'm speaking to my spouse right now? And mm-hmm. if the answer is no, turn it off.
Yeah. What about, the whole idea, I think you put it in one of your books about sort of the importance of reading these books now for parents of kids who are younger, sort of to be prepared going into the whole teenagedom thing.
That's exactly right. One of the mistakes I think we make as a culture, I do it, we all do it, is we wait until the fire is really burning and then we go for the extinguisher and mm-hmm. we try to put it out. And it's really better if you can, not start the fire to begin with. And so reading these books earlier in life and getting ready for the things that are coming, when the kids are 8 or 9, that's a pretty good time. And then you'll be better prepared to handle the issues when they come up.
Sergio writes us with this question. So what do you do when at your family table and during the meal, your kid says, Dad, Mom, can you pass me the tamales? And hey, by the way, I'm gay. He says, ha, right out of the movies. Advice, please.
It's in the book.
Yeah.
this is, of course, more common now because the gay teen and young adult are becoming more willing to be open in our society now, to be out. And I got to tell you, one of the things I might do with these books is read every scenario. And then I would go in front of the mirror and I would pretend it was happening to me. And I would see what I would say in response as a parent because, that's not the most likely scenario at holiday dinner, mm-hmm. but it could happen. And I'm going to tell you, our position on that is pretty clear throughout the books is they're your kid and you got to love them. And the American Psychological and the American Psychiatric Association have all agreed that homosexuality is not a disease. Certain presidential candidates to the contrary, and we need to love those kids and help them through those experiences.
Now, I asked you before, what do parents do wrong most often when it comes to dealing with their kids? What's the most common mistake that teenagers make in dealing with their parents, Wes?
At the holiday season particularly, kids and young adults are not quite done with their brain development. That doesn't happen until the mid-20s. And so they are, by their design, more self-centered. And I really am not saying that with a judgment. That is how they are. They are egocentric is the big words. And we need to understand that, but kids need to understand that part of being in a social relationship is adhering to some obligation to others. And so they need to not just assume that holidays are all about them and their rest period. They also need to realize that as part of their relationship, they need to spend a little time and be interested in grandma or whatever it may be. That's just part of the social exchange.
You know, they can be awfully moody, teenagers.
And I have heard that.
Yes, I have too. And how should parents deal with that? Because at what point do you step in if the teen sort of becomes too moody?
The first thing to do, because we are the adults, is to step back and think, okay, now what am I doing that may be making this situation or making it worse? And if you really do a quick self-analysis and say, no, this isn't me, then you have to start to act with the teen and lay out some consequence. If you cannot pull it together, then we're not going to be doing the visit to your boyfriend this holiday season or your girlfriend. And I think you don't want to start trouble where there isn't any, but you don't want to just be the what we call the laissez-faire parent.
Yeah. Okay. Do curfews make sense to you, Wes?
Well, for the
even when the kids come home from college and they're not used to having a curfew?
I think this is another of those hot spots you were talking about. Curfews don't exist really at college except the self-imposed curfew. And so there are two ways to look at it. One is the adult, young adult, has the power to come and go. And the other is that when you live with people, part of that social contract is you have to live with them in an effective way. And coming home at 4 in the morning may not be so neat for the parent.
Yeah, yeah. So you advise what?
I would say have an agreed-upon curfew that's quite a bit later than a high school student, say 1 or 2 o'clock, and the parent should not wait up.
How much mail do you get at the Journal World from parents who are flustered and questioning about what to do with their teens?
Well, because my email tends to come to a more confidential spot, I tend to get it directly on Ask Dr. Wes. Ask it at drwest.com. And, you know, there's a fair amount of that. It seems to be the kids, though. I tend to get more email from kids who are struggling with this, and I'm not sure, but what the parents don't just get caught off guard and don't think to ask.
Huh. That's interesting, isn't it? Why would you get more questions from the kids instead of the parents?
Well, I think they are they see themselves as the aggrieved parties in a lot of these situations. They're the ones with more to lose at the holiday season. They think family time, rest time, you know, or the social time. And so they are frustrated with the limits, and the parent may not be as sensitive to that.
Well, here's a whopper for you before you head out the door here. What advice do you give to parents, Wes, concerned about all the drinking that goes on these days with teenagers? I mean, how do you navigate those rocky roads? Because, boy, I know a lot of parents who have struggled with all of that.
Well, yeah, it is a whopper. One is always in a better position. The place you have to start is to be wise in your own substance use. And a family who has a responsible substance abuse pattern amongst the adults is simply going to have fewer problems, not no problems, just fewer problems with their teenagers and many fewer problems with the young adults. That said, the culture certainly reinforces kids to be using substances, and I think parents better decide very clearly where their level of tolerance is going to be and then enforce that.
What about parents who simply say, you know, for a junior, senior in high school, that's simply too young. It shouldn't be allowed at all, even though it's prevalent like crazy at the high school and social circles where they run.
Well, that is where my personal preference falls, most assuredly. And if you're going to pursue that, if you're going to enforce that, you'd better be very serious about it, because too many people say that and then they really waver quite a bit. And that sends the worst message to the kid that I don't really mean what I'm saying about this. I'm not really going to reinforce these boundaries the way I set them, and that's a problem.
Yeah. But, you know, how realistic is it even to have a goal like that, again, given how common drinking in high school and college, for that matter, is these days?
Well, I think that we have what I call the internal and external expectations. And the external expectation can be just as you said it: I will not tolerate substance abuse. Or it could be that I will not tolerate anything about drunk driving or drunkenness. You find where the boundary is. Then you have the internal expectation, which is you understand kids are going to color outside the lines sometime, and you're going to give whatever the consequence is. But the super secret of all parenting Are you ready? Here it comes. Don't take it personally. What kids do is not to hurt you. It is not to be taken personally. And the more a parent cannot take a child's behavior personally and understand it as part of natural development, the more they're free to let go of the emotional reactivity and really make rational decisions about how they want to proceed.
But why not? If the expectation has been laid out, let's just take a parent who has said absolutely no drinking, and son or daughter comes home one night and has clearly been drinking. Why? How can you not take that personally?
Well, because you weren't the one who did the drinking. You want to lay down a law there, but you do it as a smart person, not as an angry, emotional person. Now, sure, are you going to be angry if that happens? You are. I'm saying don't make your punishment about your anger, and this is one of the mistakes people make. Discipline is about following. The word disciple comes from the word discipline, and you want kids to follow you. And if your discipline is about being angry and personally aggrieved and, the worst one is disrespected. My goodness, that gets us a long way. then you're going to react, and reacting doesn't work.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's Dr. Wes Crenshaw. Again, he's the author of a pair of books, Dear Dr. Wes, Real Life Advice for Parents of Teens. And we sure appreciate you coming in today, Wes.
It's been great. I'm a big fan.
Thanks so much. Happy holidays to you. Again, Dr. Wes Crenshaw.